Welcome to Black Armada Tales, an actual play podcast. My name is Josh Fox. My pronouns are he, him. And I'm going to go in reverse alphabetical order just to shit Ed up. So with me today are...
Hello, I'm Sue Elliott and my pronouns are she, her.
Hi, hi, hi. I'm Nick Bate. My pronouns are he, him.
Hello, I'm a confused Ed Tomlinson and my pronouns are he, him.
I'm Becky Anderson. My pronouns are she, her, and we're going to be playing Lovecraft-esque 2nd edition. Anyway, I've got an idea. Who is my Johnny Cochran? Get yourself right, in space, Ed.
Ready.
Right. So, you're asleep.
Okay.
Have you been drinking prior to going to sleep?
I'm trying to stay off drinking, but I think I probably have a couple of tipples.
There's drinking, and then there's just a nightcap, which is perfectly acceptable.
I suspect that Jonathan hasn't been out on the town, which is what he's known for in London, but he probably does have a tray with a few hard drinks to enjoy in the evening on the balcony.
Well, I think that's very sensible. I don't think it would be the sort of hotel that you would be sent to would not provide for a brandy just before bed.
Yeah, given the tier of payment that we've put in for the
quite. So you've had a couple of brandies before you've been to sleep. And I think that what happens is you are suddenly in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, you're just suddenly awake. It's as if a huge shot of adrenaline has gone through your body. You don't really remember what you were dreaming, though.
Okay, so I think I sort of breathe in and sort of sit up and sort of look around the room.
Well, everything looks pretty normal, but it doesn't feel normal. It's almost like there's a strange shaking. Yes, that's right. A strange kind of... a very, very slight vibration that you can feel through the bed frame.
So, do I feel, anxious or, adrenaline-y? Or is it just, a moment of adrenaline that's just woken
me up? I think it's
a
moment of adrenaline that wakes you up, but you're not feeling I'm absolutely terrified. But like Josh said, you're a parent, Ed. And you know how in the middle of the night, occasionally a small child will knock on your door because they've been sick, their night lights turned off. They work for the forces of darkness. And you know that as a parent, when that knock happens, you get that sudden burst of, oh, I'm awake and I am completely awake and I am fully and my brain is very sharp and very awake. But now I realise that I've got to put somebody back to bed and soothe them.
Yeah, fortunately, I'm a very deep sleeper, which works in my favour.
I hate you. I am a very light sleeper. But that's the sort of adrenaline surge that you have experienced.
Okay, so I think I'll try and get back to sleep, but probably can't because of this buzzing thing that's annoying, right? And
I think you're right.
So I want to investigate it.
There's also the frustrating phenomenon of the moon seems to be shining directly through your window at this point in the night. You've got your curtains closed, but you know how there's this annoying little bit of gap that just will not quite go.
Nice. Okay, yeah. So I think that is something that I can immediately deal with. So I think I'll go and do that. And then I'll peer around the bed.
Ah, well, before you get to the bedpost, as you go towards the window to shut the curtains, then you will notice something very important. And what you will notice is that, as luck would have it, your bedroom window looks out across the sea towards the lighthouse.
The old lighthouse.
The old abandoned lighthouse. And in the window of the lighthouse, you can see somebody with a lamp. And you can see somebody very clearly signalling with a lamp.
Okay.
You know, like they did in the Famous Five.
Does it look like Morse code?
No, it's too fast for that. It's flickering too fast for that. In fact, now you come to think on it, the speed of the flickering is in a cadence with the sensation of buzzing that you were experiencing.
Okay. Can I feel the buzzing on the floor, or is it just on the bed? Can I?
Yes, I think you can feel it on the floor. And it is very much, it is, now that you are really concentrating on it, it's not quite like a buzz, but there is a kind of a rhythmic sensation of movement. You know, like, imagine being in a bed in an apartment which was right next to a train station, and when the trains went past, there was a sort of slight sensation of rhythmic movement in line with the beat of the trains, or the motion of the train. It's a little bit like that, but not quite as pronounced, and there's certainly no sound that goes with it.
Okay, I think... Do I have any binoculars or a telescope?
Hell yes, you do.
All right, well, then I grab them and use them, quite frankly.
I think that, yes, you can do it. And I think that helps you get a really strong impression of what's going on. Because rather than it just being suddenly a kind of a flickering of the light in the lighthouse, not the light, a lamp in one of the smaller windows in the lighthouse, I think this is the point where you have woken up enough and you're paying attention enough to realise that the light is flickering in step with the cadence of the motion for the room that you are in. And what this puts you in mind of is somebody playing the very lowest notes, lower than you could even possibly have really imagined, but the lowest notes on a very large organ.
Oh, right, so it's like a deep bass, like...
Yes.
Okay.
And that's the end of your scene.
But I don't get a picture, a view on the person in the window, or... Don't
no.
give me like a...
What I will say to you is that
clear
you
fish face of them.
Clear fish face, did you say?
Clear fish face fighting Cthulhu or something. No.
You can't see a person in the other window. All you can see is a lamp.
Okay, so I can see the lamp is flashing. So it's flashing like it's signalling.
Yes.
Your scene is over, Ed. Stop asking questions.
I don't mind if he clarifies a few bits and pieces.
Well, in your own words, would you like to write your clue out? And then while I delete the entirety of my conclusions up to this point.
Fucked my conclusions, I think.
And my clue is riffing off earlier clues. So it's riffing off what's going on in the abandoned lighthouse, but also the organ.
Yes.
Are we still of one mind, Sue, or have I fucked your conclusions as well as everyone else's?
No, I don't think that's caused too many ripples for me.
So it did,
I think that's okay. it's a patchy conclusion anyway. So, you know.
Is it something, 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 dot, 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 Cthulhu?
Yeah, equals horror.
Horror,
yeah.
Horror equals death. Skull and crossbones. Okay. Deep, it's more of a, you said there's more like a deep bass noise is what I was thinking.
Yeah, but it's not one of those things where you like, you know, when you get a bass note so deep, it's like you feel it rather than hear it. It's like that.
Okay, I think I can fix this. I think I can fix
this. Should I put that in? I'll put that in so we can come back to it.
Do we need to? Does it need some rationalising as well?
It does.
Yes, it does.
Wow, this is quite a stretch to rationalise the hell out of this.
Oh, no, you can do it. You can do it, Jonathan Cochran.
I think music runs deep in this town. There are many instrumentalists. Perhaps this is a tradition in Whitby. I must make more inquiries with the local musicians around organry and perhaps bass making. I don't know. I'm feeling sleepy now. I feel like perhaps a visit to Davy, or he may be able to show me around. I wonder what happened to Davy after the other day.
Have I really screwed up everybody's?
No, I fixed it.
Oh, good.
Fixed it. In fact, I think you may have made them slightly more interesting. So it's all good.
Well, that's the point, isn't it?
Mine is a bit Agatha Christie this time. It's a bit like there's too many different characters doing too. It's got subplots and everything. I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, this is so complicated.
The butler did it.
Everyone did it.
I definitely did it.
So, Lovecraft-esque comes with a teaching guide, which was written partway through recording this game. As a result of which, we're going to start reading out the teaching guide midway through the game. Apologies for the confusion this inevitably causes, but rest assured that should you end up playing it yourself, you will get an entire teaching guide, not just half of one. And the idea is that we each take turns to read out a little bit of text which explains to the whole table how the game works in an accessible format.
Is this us moving into part two?
Yes, we are about to move into part two, so we can read out the relevant bit, which I think, Ed, you have the privilege of reading out.
Just Ed?
I mean, I'm only saying that because it's Ed going to be the narrator next.
To turn over the rules card?
Yes, that's a good point. So you need to turn over the... You've done it already, the play card. So before starting part two, we discard the creeping horror rule. Why don't you read out the bit of the teaching guide, because that basically explains it.
Are you ready?
I was born ready, Timmy.
From this point forward, things will get a bit weirder. We are no longer bound by the creeping horror and deliberate harm rules, but now we have to obey the survival and sanity rule. This change means that the main character can now directly witness bizarre or supernatural things. However, if they do, then it must be unclear, ambiguous, or subject to doubt. For example, something might be unclear if it is glimpsed briefly through smoke. Something is ambiguous if it could have been something normal. Maybe that massive thing in the water was a whale. Something could be subject to doubt if the main character was drunk at the time. This change means that we can describe deliberate harm to humans or clear evidence of this. We still can't describe deliberate harm to the main character, though we can narrate someone deliberately trying to harm them.
So does that make sense to everyone?
Yes, so deliberate harm means, like, you can see, so people could be like... murdered.
Yeah, so in part one, we had a rule which said you can't have any deliberate harm inflicted on another human being or any evidence to show that deliberate harm was inflicted. So you can have accidental harm, but you can't have deliberate harm. And you can't have any deliberate, can't remember the exact wording, but essentially any deliberate attempt to mess with the main character. And now in part two, you can have deliberate harm to people other than the main character, and you can have deliberate attempts to mess with the main character as long as they do not actually result in harm to the main character. Have we got that right?
Just to avoid confusion, we indeed saw deliberate harm to a person in the first part, but that was because Ed played a special card that allowed him to break that rule.
Correcto. So Ed has broken the deliberate harm rule already. What a bastard.
Cool, what a bastard.
So what's meant to happen with the teaching guide is that you kind of keep going around the table, which means that I think that means, Nick, you should read the next bit of the teaching guide.
Is this to do with your warped version of the alphabet again, Josh?
It's just first name, Zed, it's fine. It's not that complicated.
Wait.
I rest my case. Yeah. Case closed.
Oh, it's me, I'm the one who should be reading it. You're right.
Case closed.
You find a book, and everything is written correctly, except that the words of the alphabet are in the wrong order.
All the J's are replaced by N's.
Okay, cool. From now on, the end game rule is in play. This means that either the narrator or the witness can start the end of game sequence after any scene. To do this, they first choose a new location, where the climactic ending of the story can take place. This should be somewhere dark, isolated, ancient, or scary. They then move the main character towards that location. The witness would do this by having the main character decide to go there of their own free will, perhaps following the trail of clues to its logical conclusion. The narrator would do it by describing how the witness is moved towards the new location against their will, for example, by falling through a trapdoor or being bundled into a vehicle that then drives off with them in it. As soon as this happens, we finish the current chapter and then begin a new stage of the game called the Journey into Darkness, which we'll explain in a short while. We can only play through three more investigation chapters now. If we reach the third investigation chapter with nobody having started the end of game sequence, it's the narrator's job to do it, and they can't end the scene in that chapter until they have. That's it. We can start a chapter now.
Okay, so after your rather strange night's sleep, you are awoken fairly late, for you, even for you, by a commotion downstairs.
Whoa! What, Mummy? I look around the room.
It's the same old room with the same old dresser that's covering up the same old stain.
I really must get to talk to the manager about that. It's just... well, what is going on?
Yeah, so you hear shouting, and you probably can't really make it out. But it's very, very raucous for this time in the morning, or any time, in fact, in the spa.
What manner of raucous, though? Like, does it sound like there's a party happening?
It sounds like somebody shouting angrily on first impression at somebody else.
And does it sound like it's coming from inside the hotel?
It sounds like it's coming from inside the hotel. And downstairs in the hotel.
Very well. I shall put on my slippers and my excellent... what would my dressing gown be made out of? Something nice.
Silk.
I put on my silk dressing gown. And I shall go out onto the... I think we established outside my room there is a landing.
Yeah, it's like a circular landing, isn't it? With the stairs that go down into the...
Yeah. I'm going to... peer over the balustrade to see whether I can see or at least identify with my ears where it must be coming from.
Okay, so as you open the door, you realise that it's been shielding you from the actual impact of the noise downstairs. There are a number of deep male voices, but one person specifically who is saying... it wasn't me. I don't know how I got here.
Do they sound like they're on the same floor, next floor down?
Next floor down. In fact, you recognise the voice, even though it is a distressed version.
There's a limited number of people who it could be then.
It's your fisherman's friend, Davy.
All right. I will lean over the balustrade and say, I say, some people around here are trying to sleep. But Davy, is that you?
So Davy, you see, is actually being pressed against a pillar by a police officer. Ooh. And is getting handcuffed. There's probably another two police officers, and you can see one of the police officers walking up the stairs towards you.
Right, I'm not having this. This is not on.
He turns to you and says, Mr. Cochrane, help! It's a misunderstanding!
I say... do unhand that young man. He's a good friend of mine, and I won't have it. What's your name, officer?
Constable... damn it.
Braithwaite.
Perfect. Beautiful, whippy name. I'm Constable Braithwaite. Mr. Cochrane, I think you're going to have to accompany us to the station.
What is the meaning of that, pray tell? I'm busily trying to enjoy a Sunday morning lie-in... and I can't think why I would need to come with you.
Well, Mr. Davy here has been mentioning your name all morning.
Oh, indeed. Well, he's probably been talking about the fishing trip that we took, I imagine.
He's been wanting your help and discussions, and therefore you are implicated in the investigation.
Investigation of what?
Brace yourselves, everybody, to cross out all of your leaping to conclusions.
So braced.
You bastard.
The murder of Dr. Mason. He was found dead this morning. Davy was found in the room by one of the patients.
I say.
Now, if you wouldn't mind accompanying me, this is a very serious matter.
Given the circumstances, I am inclined to agree that perhaps a spot of breakfast first.
I don't know what the class protocol would be in this situation.
I think we should cut to a scene where Jonathan is sat at the breakfast table with his deviled eggs and smoked haddock with the police officer sat next to him.
Yeah, okay, I think so.
Eating dry toast.
I think Davy has been packed off to an uncomfortable cell somewhere in Whitby, and you have been afforded a more comfortable interviewing process.
Excellent. Is the police officer going to attempt to interview me, or am I taking this scene way too far now?
No, I think he waits until you dab the last remains of your eggy chops with your napkin before he begins to... Now, sir, are you ready for your questions?
Certainly. I feel much restored. Would you care for a cup of tea?
Very much obliged, sir.
Would you pour?
I think one of the waiting staff turn up and diffuse the tension by pouring the tea.
Excellent, fine. I won't stand on that.
Can I just quickly ask a question? I've written the name of the person that died in the lighthouse. Is that just me making up a name, or did we establish a name?
No, I don't think we did.
Okay.
Which means you can make it up.
Well, I have at some point in the past. Old Ed made it up. So he says, do you have time to answer some questions? As Mr. Davy has mentioned your name a number of times in order to petition for your aid.
Well, I do have plight. Some time, officer. I mean, I'm not made of time, clearly, but I can make a few moments to answer your questions. And I shall certainly want to hear some answers from you as well as to why exactly poor young Mr. Davy should have been considered implicated in any of this. He seems like a very fine, upstanding fellow to me.
Well, that as may be, but he was found in the room with Dr. Mason, and there are no other possible people it could have been, frankly.
Well, we'll see about that. What are your questions?
How long have you been in Whitby, sir?
About 5 days.
And how many deaths have occurred in those 5 days, sir?
Well, I couldn't possibly say. Isn't that your job to keep track of that sort of thing?
Well, I count two, sir, and...
I see.
I do have to say, it's come to our attention that they have been in your proximity. Both of them, in fact.
Have they?
Yes, sir. Yes, they have.
I don't believe I've acquainted myself with the second of these. You mentioned that you thought that Davy had been in the room.
Yes, Dr. Mason has been murdered.
Yes, you said.
And Reginald.
The chap from the lighthouse, one must assume.
Reginald, exactly. Reginald, missing surname.
Yes. A frightful case. We stumbled upon him while on a fishing
ship.
But I fail to see how that links me to the unfortunate demise of Dr. Mason.
Well, both you and Davy on a fishing trip. An alleged fishing trip near the lighthouse. Find a body. Curious.
Well, someone had to find it.
Davy found next to a dead body in the spa in which you are staying, sir. Suspicious.
Yes, I see how it looks quite bad for Davy, and I can assure you, though, that I shall be seeking to source legal assistance for young Davy. However, I still do not see how that makes a connection with yours truly. Perhaps you had better go back to your detective's handbooks, officer, since I myself have not been present with the said Dr. Mason.
Very well, sir. I take it you won't be leaving Whitby in the short term. If you have any further questions?
Far from it, but I would like to know a little more about what has happened to poor Dr. Mason, if you wouldn't mind sharing.
Well...
Why, it was only the other day that I saw him and he seemed quite sprightly.
Well, that is the nature of murder, sir. You don't have to be unwell to be murdered, you do know that.
Yes. Yes, I suppose that's true.
Mm. Especially at the hands of a young man like Davy.
Nevertheless, Dr. Mason was far more than merely well. He was a robust man. I should hate to contemplate killing such a person. I rather fear the tables would be turned quite swiftly. How was it done?
He sort of looks at you suspiciously at the fact that you were contemplating the murder of Dr. Mason.
I just look back at him confidently.
Indeed. Indeed, sir. Anyway, we have much to do, if you'll excuse me. we have little time for small talk. We'll be in touch in time. He doffs his hat.
Yes, well, thank you.
Vaguely respectfully.
I should like to check in on my good friend Davy. I hear what you say about him being in the room and no one else could have done it and all of that, but that, my friend, that does not accord with an Englishman's rights to a fair trial and innocent until proven guilty and all that.
Indeed, you're welcome to see the suspect, as he's been asking for you. You can be his point of contact, sir.
Oh, good. Where is he? Is he having breakfast too?
I very much doubt it, sir. Would you like to accompany me to the station then, sir?
Well, very well.
I guess it'll be like a carriage, wouldn't it? There's no combustion engines at this point.
I don't know. Whitby doesn't seem like a very carriage-friendly place to me.
It would be like a weird, like, uncomfortable walk between you and the police officers down a couple of roads to the police station.
I don't think Jonathan registers it as uncomfortable at all. I think he walks like he is on a cheery seaside walk.
Are you still wearing your, like, dressing gown and pyjamas?
No, I think he's got changed.
So you've made them wait.
I do like the idea of him just strolling down the police station in his pyjamas, but that's just going, it's taking it a bit too far. I think he's wearing a nice suit and he has lit a cigarette and he's strolling along. Perhaps he whistles. Absolutely no concept that there's any kind of legal danger here.
Yeah, it probably isn't really for him.
No, I don't think there is. Yeah,
so it's just interesting to note that you make the police wait, but you also make Davy, who is pleading for your help, wait. Also, well,
it's only breakfast. A bit more important, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there's no point going there with a bad head and an empty stomach.
There's probably some sort of Victorian slang term for that.
Yes, I'll look it up later. Okay, you arrive at the police station. It's a very, very small police station. Like, it's like a hole in the wall kind of thing with a front desk. Mm-hmm. And you sort of get escorted to the side, kind of back office, and then led into the cells. There's like a couple of holding cells in which Davy is blubbing in one of them.
Oh dear. I'm led in, you say.
You're let in. I think, yeah, I think you're left with a police officer near the door.
All right, cool. Well, I will sit down next to Davy and I'll say, there, there's a good chap. There's no need for that. Pull yourself together, man. And then there will be an awkward pause.
But, sir, I don't remember a thing. One minute I was wandering the streets and the next I wake up next to Dr. Mason. Dead. And the police bursting in on me. No one's going to believe me, sir. They're going to hang me, aren't they?
No, I'm sure there'll be no call for that. And I shall make sure that you get the best legal assistance, Davy. The very best. This is quite, it's unacceptable. That's what it is. When you say wandering the streets and then you woke up...
Well... I've had my suspicions about one of the societies, and I was following one of them, and then I woke up where I was.
Do you think that you were attacked, Davy? I lean in conspiratorially. Did somebody strike you from behind, perhaps?
I don't have a sore head. There's something at work, sir. There's something I don't understand. You remember the machine? The machine in the lighthouse? The man, Reginald.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Well, I found that this in one of the community centres. Looks familiar, doesn't it? Looks similar. And he slides like a small gadget or something into your hands.
I think Jonathan will try to be furtive. He'll sort of take the gadget and not really look at it straight away. Just put his hands in his lap. And then... maybe sort of gesticulate a little to allow him to glance down at it without the police officer seeing.
Okay, so what on the device, this is for the whisperers, all of the whisperers, what on this tiny device, which is like a small kind of clockwork device, links it to the organ down in the basement of the spa or sanitarium or whatever we're calling it?
Are you asking Josh or the Whisperers?
The Whisperers.
Oh, I've got an idea then. So I don't know if you have ever seen one of those pianos which has a top that shuts down over the keys to like keep them free of dust, but sometimes they have a key. It's that. There's kind of, I don't know if it's like, almost like a cabinet front or a top that comes down over the organ or something like that. And it's lockable. And this is a key that would fit that lock.
There you go. That's what he hands to you.
With the geometric design that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Running down.
It matches the panel of yeah. the front.
I look slightly blankly at it.
Look, Mr. Cochrane, I know. You're the smartest man in Whitby. I respect you, sir. Help me get out of prison. You're my only hope of getting out of here. You know, deep down there's something going on. Only you can get to the bottom of it. And he slumps back onto the bunk with his head in his hands.
Oh no, poor Davy is lost.
You needn't worry, Davy. I'm going to make sure that you get out of this.
Scene.
I really like if you either the level of intelligence in Whitby is extremely poor.
Well, you're posh, I guess you get immediate.
Yeah.
Jonathan probably is quite smart, isn't he? He's just just playing up the Bertie
yeah,
Wooster.
I mean, Boris Johnson's quite clever, I guess.
Oh, let anybody into Oxford. It is Oxford he went to, isn't it? Not Cambridge. Yeah, I'd love to let anybody into Oxford.
It's basically like Birmingham Poly.
Yeah.
That's it? Do you want me to, in my own words, summarise the clue? Because I sort of meandered to it.
Sure, yeah, I think so. I'm going to kill everybody off. I never got to find out what actually happened to the doctor, which I was desperate to try and find out, but I just got distracted every time it came up.
Well, my view is, if I haven't seen a body and licked a wound, I don't believe they're dead.
Right.
You have to rationalise.
Yeah, you do.
Yes.
Go on,
right.
Rationalise so that.
So the clue, just for the benefit, because there was some doubt about it, I don't think there was that much doubt, Davy handed Jonathan a small key with geometric patterns matching the organ in the basement of the spa. He found it in a quote-unquote community centre. And then it also says he's also killed Dr. Mason, allegedly, which feels like a separate thing to me, but unless he killed him with the key.
Just in case you forget that I put that in the scene.
There's not a clue. I know that I'm the one who said key to the organ in the basement, but when I first read the clue that you'd written, I was like, key to a liver?
All right, let me be slightly more vague. Yeah, there we go. It doesn't necessarily mean it is anything to do with the key. It's got the same geometric patterns that are on the organ. So it might not be a key to the organ.
No, it's not that. It was that the organ that was in my head was not a playing organ. It was like a kidney type organ.
Well, maybe it
all
is.
Of a sudden.
Maybe the organ is an organ.
I think it's because of the proximity of this sentence about a dead body.
Hang on, I'm leaping to conclusions immediately.
So I think Jonathan returns to the hotel in a state of some anxiety, is not the right word, some discomfiture. Is that a word? Some discomfiture. He has kept the key in his breast pocket and he takes it out now and places it on the desk in his room and stares at it. And then he gets out his little journal and writes an entry. But he has to stop. He takes out his pen and he just sort of stares at the page for a good long while before writing... Frightfully strange events afoot in Whitby. Death of Dr. Mason, most disturbing. Clearly, Davy could not be responsible for this. He wouldn't have it in him. He's not that type of man. And if his story is to be believed, then he found himself in the room by some misadventure, or perhaps he was attacked. It is all most peculiar. And now here, the key, the recurring pattern. I cannot understand what it all means, but skullduggery is afoot. That much is certain. Somebody is out to frame Davy for not one, maybe two murders, and I mean to get to the bottom of it.
We'll make a hero of you yet.
Yes. Maybe it is an Agatha Christie story. Right, conclusions. This key.
So I can't just put it was Davy what done it?
You can have that as your conclusion. It will just be wrong.
Do you know, I'm beginning to perceive certain flaws in my conclusions that should have been apparent from the start. Thank you for listening to Black Armada Tales. We've been playing Lovecraft Esk 2nd Edition by Josh Fox and Becky Anderson. Lovecraft Esk will be coming to a crowdfunding platform near you later this year. You can also find the 1st edition on blackarmada.com, and if you'd like to keep an eye out for the 2nd edition, you may want to sign up to the Black Armada mailing list. We'll include a link to that in the show notes. See you next time.
But yes, we should definitely go away for a weekend again and play all the games. And then we can, if we do that, then I'd like to pitch Black Mass, because that's a game that I'm super keen on playing. And I've looked at Black Mass and I just think it looks like a real ball ache to do it digitally.
Yeah.
The thing is, I really want to go away for a full week. That's the honest truth. Is like, I just don't think a weekend is quite enough to really, you know.
Have 3 days leave between now and October.
Did you spend it all on a big honeymoon?
No, unfortunately. I spent it all on a trip to Australia last.
Oh, you did that, didn't you?
That is selfish.
Yeah.
The only person who benefited from that was you. And you didn't even get the full benefit because you had to socially distance.
Yeah, that's a damn lie. Everybody else benefited from my presence in Australia.
Yeah, Australia celebrated his return.
Most like, favoured son.
And then they were like, oh, when he left.
Yeah.
But did you really need to give for that length of time?
I mean, have you ever? When was the last time you were on a plane for 26 hours? The fact that I was only in Australia for like 11 days, cutting it fine.
I was so lucky on my flight to Australia because I was in a terrible seat just before takeoff, and then I spotted that the emergency exit seat was free, and I was like, nice. And I normally wouldn't be bold enough to ask, but I was like, I'm getting that flipping seat, and I managed to get it, and it was. All good, but like nice. I think about the other red that didn't do that, and every time I do it, I'm like, I could end up in that seat next time I travel to Australia, and it'll be horrible.
We're going on holiday in a few weeks to Hampshire. I need to book my leave, actually, Josh. You need to send me the dates again.
Just make sure you get the exit row.
Yeah, make sure you get to out Hampshire. Yeah. Make sure you know how to use the emergency exit door.
Deepest, darkest Hampshire.
Hampshire, down
to the Hampshire, you go into Hampshire and there's like this little door with like a little red handle that says do not pull. And if you do pull it, then the door opens and the whole of Hampshire just sort of falls down
on itself. hopefully
it pulls in Surrey at the same time.
I can't.
Like, would I miss Hampshire? I don't know.
Very much.
The Mary Rose. I'm going to go see the Mary Rose in Portsmouth.
It's the Mary Rose.
Mary Rose. I wouldn't mind seeing if we can get a ferry over to the Isle of Wight.
Are you going to have a prawn cocktail salad when you go and see the Mary Rose so you can have a Mary Rose,
sauce
near a Mary Rose?
And we could have a Bloody Mary, or is that too tenuous a link?
No, I think you can have a Bloody Mary in your Mary Rose salad on the Mary Rose. That's what I want to see from you guys.
You actually can't go on the Mary Rose. It's all
well. That's my challenge. Go on the throne. You've got to take the salad and the Bloody Mary and not spill it, and get on there and have a selfie.
I think it's in some sort of protected environment, so it is quite a decent challenge. That
it's a reversed heist.
Getting in the first place quite hard. Getting in while carrying a prawn cocktail and a Bloody Mary as extra challenge.
We went to the Natural History Museum last week. It was so good. It's always so
good. The one
down. Yeah, the one down there.
Haven't been.
Go. It's free. You know they're free,
what?
Right? It's free.
Yeah,
and you know it has dinosaurs in it.
Yep.
What?
Why are you
still sitting in your chair? Why aren't you there right now?
Yeah.
It's across the road from the V&A.
Yes.
And the V&A is a big pool.
Yeah, okay. It's very cool. I've been to the V&A. Plus,
I've tried to get to the V&A, but ended up going to the Natural History Museum every time. So.
Did I mention dinosaurs?
They have the most complete Stegosaurus skeleton that has ever been discovered anywhere in the world in the natural history.
Where did they steal it from?
I don't know.
We curated it, okay?
They have massive gallery of hominids, like bones and like all the different types. And right now you can go and see Cheddar Man, and there's loads of them. Like a
Cheddar Man?
Like the old, yeah, Cheddar Man. He's like a man made out of cheese.
Giant cheese guy. Just
made out of cheddar.
Get his autograph, you know, a selfie.
You can see like one of the oldest burials, human burials ever found, a Neanderthal burial.
They have a chunk of preserved, a type of Ankylosaurus, but it's not just the bones, it's like a chunk of its flesh and its skin. So it's basically like just like a massive like steak of Ankylosaurus. So you can get like a real sense of the scale of the thing, not just in terms of the bones, but like the whole chunky
The meaty goodness.
That's one of my favourite things when I go. Ankylosaurus is my favourite dinosaur, and I always make a beeline for that so I can marvel at that. And the other thing that I always go to see the Natural History Museum, in case this isn't selling it to you enough, Nick, is they have a Megatherium, which is the giant sloth.
Nice.
I have a skeleton of a Megatherium, and it is just so big. Like, because you're standing on the floor, and it's all, like, up on its hind legs, the way they've posed it. And it's
and
just
a whole,
huge.
A whole corridor, the walls of which are bedecked with plesiosaurs and ichthyosaurs. I mean, it's just brilliant.
It's amazing. You don't have to sell it.
I'm convinced.
So, so why are you still here? Why are you?
Is it open now?
Yeah. Just pop down there. Well, you know that they do overnights. You can get.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can have like gin in a sleeping bag and sleep in the dinosaur hall.
Oh, that's cool.
Did you say gin and a sleeping
bag? I do adult ones where you can like sleep over. They do kids ones, but they do adult ones where you sleep over with Prosecco and stuff.
Someone should do fossil gin.
Do you remember we went to a special forensics evening at the Natural History Museum?
I do remember that, yeah.
You had to get dressed up in those white paper suits and like take blood samples off guns and stuff. It was amazing. It's the coolest thing ever.
Wow.
I think it's because there's some people at the Natural History Museum who like to have a sideline in doing forensics work, like identifying pollen on shoes and stuff for the police or something.
And like there's entomologists who will tell you, based on the exact state of the insect larvae on a corpse, how long that corpse has had to decay.
I feel like this is a perfect nerd circle. We started with a discussion about nerds, and we've completed with some absolute mega nerdery, which is great.
But like the natural world is just so cool.
What do you think about the natural world? I like it. I think it's good.
Nobody ever asked a football nerd about how long a corpse has been dead.
No, I love all that stuff. I love it.
It's so good.